Salutations, Mets fans, and welcome to episode 73 of Amazing Avenue Audio, the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Amazing Avenue. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostro, and with me this week for some post-draft wrap-up is Alex Nelson. Alex, welcome back to the show.
Always a pleasure to be here.
It worked out well. Alex just finished up his draft reports this morning, recording this on Monday night, which allows us to talk about the draft instead of talking about the Mets team for two reasons. One, the Mets team makes me sad, and I haven't watched a lot of Mets baseball over the last week. I've been like sneaking an hour here and there in between World Cup games, so that's really been my schedule.
I haven't watched a single Mets game in about 3 months, so.
That's good, when we're totally prepared to not talk about the Mets. This is episode 73. We'll combine a little bit of Mets history and a little bit of this week's topic and call this the You Gotta Believe in the Mets Draft Since They're Not Picking College Relievers Anymore edition, which they're not really. I mean, they picked a couple, but they did not pick any early college relievers. This actually came up on Twitter. What draft? We were talking about some terrible Omar draft. Oh, it was the Eddie Kunz draft, because in one of the hour bits that I watch in between World Cup matches, Ron Darling and Gary were talking about Eddie Kunz for some reason. I don't remember why. Because he went to Oregon State. Was he Oregon State or Oregon?
I think Oregon State.
Yeah, so he went to the same school that Conforto did. So I think that's probably why they were discussing him. And Ronnie says something like, "Man, you just don't know about the draft." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, you don't really know about the draft, but you shouldn't pick college relievers in the first round."
I mean, Kunz was a disaster that you could have seen coming a mile away.
And that was the same year they picked Nathan Vinyard and Blant Rustich and Scott Mobile. So someone asked if it was like the worst draft in history. And find out the worst draft in history just because they picked up a couple guys at the back end. But in terms of just squandering like five picks in the top 70 or whatever the ridiculous amount they had that year, it was a pretty impressive feat.
It was a combination of terrible drafting with a little bit of bad luck.
Hopefully we won't be saying the same about the 2014 draft in 7 years or so. So what we'll do for this week's show is we'll go over sort of the top line names, first few picks, and then we'll break it down, gloss over some of the back end of the top 10, since a lot of those picks were underslot guys. And then we'll give a couple sleepers or guys we like in the later rounds that may or may not sign or may have already signed. After that, we have one email that is actually draft related. We'll cover that. We'll also talk a little bit about Blake Taylor, who was announced this weekend as the final piece of the puzzle, the player to be named later in the Ike Davis deal. If my wife's cell phone goes off, I don't know why she left it in the room while I'm recording. It's better than the dogs, I guess, for a change of pace. Now that I've lost my train of thought, so we'll talk a little about Blake Taylor. And then we'll answer your one email, and I have an announcement at the end of the show, and then we'll call it a week. I will not promise a short podcast. I did last week, and we went 40 minutes longer than I was planning. But it'll be a podcast, and we'll talk about the draft, so here we go. And I guess we'll start with Michael Conforto, who we talked about a lot on our draft preview edition, yeah. Since the Mets were already, were linked to him. Once again, the Mets picked someone they were linked to early and throughout the entire process. We talked a little bit about him on our Google Hangout on draft night 2, but for those of the listeners that may be just joining us, give your sort of elevator speech on the Michael Conforto pick.
Well, he certainly wasn't my favorite draft prospect that the Mets could have selected in this spot. I think I had him ranked 18th on my board. But that said, there is a lot. Conforto does have a lot going for him, and he shouldn't be dismissed. He's been a very good hitter for Oregon State. Productive. He has a fantastic approach. He's willing to wait for his pitch, and if it doesn't come, he'll just take the walk. Keith Law said that he could see him being a 400 on base guy. I don't know if I can see that. I do think that he certainly could post on base percentages well over a 350. And The only real question that I have about him is whether he's going to hit for enough contact to be a consistently productive major league hitter. And he has a very deep hand load, which can add some length to his swing. And, you know, I'm just not totally sold on whether he'll be able to do that. But you have to like the power. He projects to hit 20-25 home runs a season. And provided he makes enough contact to do that, but he'll also have he'll have the secondary skills.
Now, sort of the comp that keeps coming up with Conforto, and it's kind of a lazy comp. We're talking about, you know, hunting strikes and sort of the Mets, a Metsian hitter, or a hitter this front office likes in Conforto. The comp is always Lucas Duda. Now, Lucas Duda is a competent left fielder, which I think we both agree Conforto could be. He's not going to be anything special, but he's certainly not going to be Lucas Duda.
They're in different stratospheres. And that's not to say Conforto is going to be a great left fielder, but he is a left fielder. There's no doubt in my mind that he can handle the position competently and be an average to solid average defensive left fielder.
And that is kind of like the Lucas Duda profile, I guess, depending on. And what it comes down for Conforto is, like you said, does he make enough contact to sort of get that batting average up? Because Duda is the kind of guy, over 150 games, will give you 20-25 home runs and like a 350 on base percentage with his really high walk rate. But it's just not, you know, for the number 10 pick in the draft, it's just not particularly exciting. It's like, it's sort of like a...
I certainly agree there that I think that there were players available with more upside, but I will also say that I think they were all on the pitching side of things. In terms of hitting ability, I'm not sure there was anybody that I would have wanted more. It just wasn't a very good draft for hitters, especially at the top.
And we've seen the Mets do this before. I think we mentioned this on the pre-draft show as well, with sort of the Brandon Nimmo draft, when there wasn't much depth in hitting. They went and grabbed a hitter early, not knowing if they could get one later, and then picked up pitching later. Obviously, they went with Fulmer and then four straight college arms after that. This year was a little different. It was a draft that was very deep in pitching as well, but they didn't have a second-round pick because of the Granderson contract, and actually did not pick a pitcher until the fifth round, which was a, you know, an underslot senior, albeit an interesting one, who we'll get to in a little bit. But how do you think, sort of, to sort of zoom out from Conforto for a second, what do you think sort of the Mets' big picture strategy was for the 2014 draft?
Oh, it was definitely to grab as many good hitters as they could early, and then spend the last 30 rounds or so just picking up arms. The Mets went for just pure hitting ability throughout the first 8 or 9 rounds. I mean, they grabbed a couple of pitchers here and there, but they didn't even go for particularly good athletes. They went for hitting, and I think they recognized the scarcity of hitting in this draft and wanted to make sure that they got some.
And Conforto certainly fits that mold, and as Alex alluded to earlier, Keith Law said he's a 400 on base percentage guy, potentially 20-25 home runs, and said as of right now, he is the number one prospect in the Mets system, even ahead of Noah Syndergaard. That seems kind of crazy to me.
I don't